coming up on That Was a Show. Phenom was a show. This 90s family sitcom featured a teenage tennis champ, a Carly Simon song, and Catholic guilt. It had a stacked cast of TV ringers, including Judith Light and William Devane, plus top-notch comedy writers. So what happened? Lots of people liked it, especially 8-year-old Bryn. The gang has a rowdy discussion about this sitcom and the racket of show business. We grew up during peak sitcom, Seinfeld, Friends, The Fresh Prince, but those shows were diamonds in the rough. This podcast is not about those diamonds. It's about the rough. Some sitcoms were briefly popular in their time. Some were canceled almost immediately. You probably won't recognize most of these, and you'll ask, that was a show?
That was a show?
The podcast about failed or forgotten sitcoms from the 80s and 90s, starring
Bryn Burney,
Aaron Yeager,
and Andrew Helmer as Barry.
A Radio Gizmo production.
Happy Passover, Easter, and Ramadan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the spring holidays are happening.
All at once.
That's right.
Yeah.
Birds are singing. Bees are trying to have sex with them, as is my understanding.
Well, here in Ontario, the annoying thing that happens every year happened today, where, you know, it's supposed to be like a spring holiday and you wake up and there's a dusting of snow on the ground. It's like,
yeah.
It's just, it always happens, and it's like super annoying. It's like when everyone thinks spring is here, it's like we get a little bit of extra snow.
It has yet to sprung.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sun is out, so that's nice, but
one final kick in the junk of winter.
Yes, exactly.
Good old I don't know, guys. I don't know. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
How's it? Welcome to That Was a Show, your favorite podcast called That Was a Show.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another one. I don't know.
I don't think there is, but I like to think that we're, you know, in the hearts and minds of podcast listeners everywhere.
Yeah, this is the show. The That Was a Show.
Okay.
Show.
Whoa.
But we dropped the because it was cleaner.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Okay.
Just stellar banter, guys.
Yeah.
Just A+.
Yeah.
You're always judging our banter as it's happening.
Well, because
stand by our banter, Barry.
If you comment on it, then it becomes meta, and then it the laziness of it then becomes its own joke.
Oh man, seeing your coffee makes me want to go get a coffee next door, but it's probably a bad decision. It's late in the day.
Seeing your jug of water makes me want to get a giant jug of water, I guess.
Anyway. All right. Phenom.
Okay.
Phenom.
Bryn, tell us about Phenom.
Okay. So Phenom was a short-lived sitcom. Fancy that, guys. We're covering a short-lived sitcom. It aired on ABC for one season from September 1993 to May 1994. It's a coming-of-age and family sitcom centered on teenage tennis prodigy Angela Doolin, her mother Diane, her siblings Brian and Mary Margaret, and her larger-than-life coach Lou. Angela Goethals plays Angela, so not a stretch for her. Judith Light plays her mother. Ashley Johnson plays her little sister. And Todd Luiso plays her brother, Brian. Her intense and wacky coach, Lou De La Rosa, is played perfectly by William Devane. The show was created by Dick Blasucci, Mark Flanagan, and Sam Simon, who all worked together on The Tracy Ullman Show, and each previously worked on a variety of other popular comedies. The show was produced by James L. Brooks's Gracie Films. So what exactly happened here?
Well, first of all, I have to say, it's weird hearing Judith Light call someone else Angela.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What a mindfuck,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone out there, unless you're a tiny child, remembers that she was, of course, Angela from Who's the Boss?
Some might argue the boss.
Yeah, so basically...
I would not. Mona was the boss.
Okay, all right. I knew that was going to happen. yeah, so this show is like right off the bat, like everybody can tell, it's kind of like full of sitcom A-listers. Like even Ashley Johnson, who was only like 8 or 9 in this show, had already come off of a stint playing the youngest Seaver on Growing Pains.
So oh, she is that was, where she, yeah.
Yeah, they were all kind of basically on ABC sitcoms before this.
Right.
Yeah. So for this episode, we watched the pilot and we also watched the final episode that aired of Phenom. So it was the season and ultimately the series finale of the show. I chose this show because I remember watching it and what? Enjoying it. As an 8-year-old, I guess. I guess I was like around Mary Margaret's age, Ashley Johnson's character's age, when it aired. So I remember watching this show and thinking it was like fantastic. And I don't remember what night of the week it aired, but I would look forward to a new episode. And then suddenly it was gone and young Bryn was devastated. So...
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was phenomenal.
It's cute. It's yeah. cute. I could see a young Bryn liking this, or even a young Barry. I mean, it's cute. There's certainly nothing offensive about it.
Oh no, totally. Like it. You know, it's funny because coming back to this show, like many years later, I really appreciate the specificity of this show. Like the fact that she is like a tennis pro at like age 15, the main character, like I find that really interesting because I don't remember any other sitcoms at the time doing that or dealing with that. You know, usually it's just a run of the mill family sitcom where like the situation that they're all in the situation comedy
yeah.
is like very like not only low stakes, but like low concept. Whereas this yep. is like slightly higher concept in that it's like an unusual circumstance that the family is in. And, you know, the fact that there's so much, you know, they're very into the Catholic Church. That's another random thing.
I'm glad you said that because you know? I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, is that a Judith Light thing? I was very taken aback, especially since like. Angela doesn't go to Catholic school.
Well, I think Angela doesn't go because she's probably... Oh, no, she's like going to a public high school.
She goes to a public high school. Yeah. And none of her... Yeah.
But so Mary Margaret is in a yeah. very stereotypical Catholic, like, private school, which doesn't really exist here in Canada. Like, our types of Catholic schools, Barry and I having attended Catholic
but
schools, they're very different
my
here.
My understanding...
We didn't have Joe Flaherty.
No, we didn't have
sure.
Joe Flaherty. Yeah.
My understanding is that the Ontario system of having Catholic public schools is relatively rare.
Yeah.
In the
oh,
world.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I think, yeah, in the United States, and certainly how it's depicted in TV and movies, it's very much a private school. And it's like, you know, their school uniforms are very intense. Like the ones that we used to wear when we went to our Catholic high school, Barry, they were very shabby. Like they were very non, you know, like they were just like a shirt and pants. Like they were not these like weird, like.
Well, because it was the 90s and we were just sort of starting to phase out the.
Yeah.
We were phasing out the kilt. Yeah. And the sweater.
Yeah.
So we kind of came into it right at the end of that.
Yeah, the early 2000s.
What we were left with was certainly bland.
Yeah, sure.
A thought on this whole high concept thing. Like, yeah. it's true. Like the thing of her pursuing this thing, which in this case is pro tennis, but really it could be anything. Just that idea of someone at that age, like sort of adolescent or mid-teens, they're at that age where if they are going to pursue something in that way, like a pro sport or perhaps music or theater in a serious way, you know, it's a thing that kids at that age might start to veer into. And you don't see a lot of that in shows like this.
Yeah.
And what I appreciate is that it is a little bit high concept, but not because there's like aliens or ghosts or like any of those surrealist high concept things. It's a very
grounded,
real.
Yeah. High concept, low stake.
High it concept, is. Low stakes, grounded.
Yeah. Low execution.
So basically,
In the two episodes we watched, you didn't see a single like frame of tennis.
In the specific two episodes, I believe that there is some there has to be.
And I think that was the thing that is a little awkward about it, and I don't necessarily think it's why the show didn't last longer.
Yeah.
But of all the things you could have chosen to be that particular pursuit for a 15-year-old, choosing something that is very challenging to actually film and put into a sitcom episode
seems unwise. Yeah.
Was an unwise choice. But the thing that I wanted to get at that's psychologically interesting to me is that you have actors playing these characters, like the actress who plays
Angela.
The actress who plays Angela is a child star. So the person playing this tennis player,
there's a bit of a parallel.
Has a parallel in their real life, in the sense that they, as a youth, chose to pursue acting in a professional way on a very big scale, which would have disrupted their normal schooling and normal life. So there's that line where it's like, can I be a great player and a normal person? And the coach is like, of course not.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, it's almost like watching the child actor asking an acting coach that same question.
Yeah,
that is interesting. Yeah.
So I should, I guess, like run down like the main like premise and theme. So essentially, you know, like obviously the most obvious thing is that it's this family kind of dealing with this pursuit, this very intensive pursuit of the middle child. And, you know, they're all kind of like wrapped up in it. And it's like kind of like all of their relationship with it. But also because it wouldn't be a 90s sitcom without it, there is a single mom. So Judith Light has recently divorced at the start of this series. And the dad is kind of like, he's referenced. I don't know if he's shown in the series again. He might be.
In a synopsis, I saw he does come up in a future episode. And I think tries to take over the daughter's tennis career.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. So basically, she's been left for a younger woman, which is like a trope that we've seen a lot in these shows. And, you know, she's just trying to navigate raising her three kids basically, you know, on her own. And she has this middle child with this like exceptional talent and, you know, this very involved pursuit. Right. So at the start of the series, you know, at the start of the pilot, they're in their car, they're driving back from a tournament or something, and Angela has just won, and she has this massive trophy between them. And so, you know, there's kind of a bit of, you know, back and forth between her and like mother and daughter. And then when they get back to the house, like they're talking as well about the dad that recently, because, you know, they have to have the exposition dump. And it comes out at a certain point, I guess when they get home, they get the phone call from this coach, Lou Della Rosa, that basically he's scouted her at this tournament and he wants to coach her. And so the whole kind of like challenge of that pilot is like whether or not she's going to leave town to go pursue this coaching with this very prominent coach. And it's like a whole thing of like, okay, this is a big choice because, you know, I'm going to miss out on normal things for high school and I'm going to have to like leave my family and all of this. So it's kind of like the thing that they're all grappling with in this episode, and it's kind of sweet, but it's also like not relatable to most people, you know?
No, it's not. I wanted to say to round out the family and the tropes.
Oh, yeah.
You have the younger sister who is, of course, extremely precocious, like off the charts precocious. The thing, though, where she like gives money to a televangelist, that did make me laugh pretty. Like,
yeah. So basically, they arrive home from the tournament and they catch Mary Margaret on the phone about to pledge money to some televangelist using
her credit card,
her mom, the mom, Diane's credit card,
pretending she's 18.
Apparently it's not the first time she's done it. Apparently she's just this like, you know, kind of compulsive kid who just like takes that and likes to, you know, do things that kids don't normally do. And the reason she's like doing this is because oldest brother is not around when he should be watching her. And oldest brother is really wacky.
So
oldest brother Brian, yeah. He defies stereotypes of oldest children. Yeah. As an oldest child, he does not like fit the mold either.
No.
Like,
he's not a trope. He's a unique character.
He's a unique. He's very eccentric.
When I saw him, my first thought was like, how old is this older brother supposed to be? Because he and his girlfriend who's there both seemed like...
22 is what, how old he said he was.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they actually answered that question, because I was like, give me a reason why he's also like living with them and part of this whole dynamic. Yeah. And there's that joke where he's upset that she might leave home to pursue this tennis thing. And he's upset that she'll leave home before he does.
Yeah.
He's like
so
21
he's like
or 22
yeah.
and he's jealous. And he's a unique character. Hard to follow.
Todd Luisu giving off like major Crispin Glover energy.
Oh, totally. Oh, yes. It's totally Crispin Glover energy. Like, yeah, it's very kooky. He's like the kooky older brother, which is like an odd, I don't think it's a trope. It is. Yeah, it's just its own thing. And it works in this. Yeah, like I found it very enjoyable.
Kooky older brother. We see I can think of a few examples of similar types, but not like this. Like you have like, say, you know, Will Friedle on Boy Meets World.
Right.
Or I'm trying to think of like Steve Zahn on Titus was another one.
Current but like, examples yep. is yeah. Alan Ruck on Succession.
The kooky
oldest brother.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it turns out, you know, and we'll get into this more when we talk about episode 22. He's a little deeper in that episode than what we see in the pilot.
It's very funny.
And it turns out that like he's kooky and emotional, but also he's like principled and like supportive of his siblings. He's a rich tapestry.
Yeah. So we should get to, we got to get to Coach Lou De La Rosa, because that's when it really gets funny. So they are kind of grappling with his decision as a family, and a very classic promotional video is played, because it comes in the mail, basically that outlines Lou's coaching, like his like little academy and his like coaching services. And it's like, I don't know. Aaron, do you want to describe it? It's very
funny.
Yeah, the video.
It's one of those videos. Like, I love how it opens on like the message that accompanies the video is to watch it and then be sure to rewind it after.
Yeah, because clearly like he doesn't have that many of them, and he's clearly gonna take the tape with him when he
it's a VHS and he's only got one or two copies, so he has to take it back and send it to the next kid.
So
that's funny.
The theme of the video is that people don't like him much, but he's effective.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of repeated throughout the whole thing.
And
at one point near the beginning, he says, many people say I'm the greatest damn coach that ever lived. And then there's like a big text graphic that says copyright, greatest damn coach that ever lived.
It's like a registered trademark of the.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing, it's one of those things that.
It's very silly, but I found it very
interesting. It's like a Simpsons gag.
It is.
It's
very much like a Simpsons gag, but.
Great William Devane. He's just firing on all cylinders.
He's
a great, it's a great sitcom character. It's a great William Devane performance.
Yeah.
It's like he's been playing similar types since this. Like this is 30 years ago and he still pops up and stuff.
Totally. He's hilarious. Like they couldn't have put anyone else in that role. Like it was perfect.
Yeah. And the promo video has all of the moments that you would expect of like late 80s, early 90s VHS promo where, you know, he walks out in front of the camera and smiles with a toothy grin, swings a tennis racket. There's a bunch of like kids who are in it posing. There's all these weird cuts to like how his tennis school has the best food, and there's a couple of kids who cheers with like glasses of presumably like not champagne but like Perrier while someone's like carving rack of lamb or something. Like it's all very like funny, cheesy, but like it's half earnest and half joke. It's
Yeah.
It's perfect for what it is.
Yeah. So when he shows up like in person and tries to basically sell himself to the family, you know, he gives this whole rousing speech about how he really wants to work with Angela to like make sure that she's, you know, achieves all she can. And he's like really trying to like pump her up. And then Brian is watching all the while and he jumps in at the end. He's like, pick me.
Oh, that was funny. Yeah.
That's a good moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, yeah. So he's like trying to convince the family to be like, hey, like, no, she needs to come off and come to my academy. And they're just too like, as a family, like you can tell like they had been through a lot. And they're not ready to, like, basically let her leave the nest. And she's not really ready either because there's parts of her, you know, as a typical teenager, she doesn't want to miss out on things like, you know, average teen things, like hanging out with friends and meeting boys and all this stuff. And it's ultimately, you know, decided that they make a compromise because he sees such talent in Angela. That he's like, okay, you know what? I'm going to coach her on the weekends only. She can go to school, be with her friends, but then she's mine all weekend. And so they kind of settle on that and that kind of kicks off the rest of the
which is actually
series.
A very reasonable compromise.
It is a reasonable compromise, I think.
Especially since he's going to like travel to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's going to have to move away to be to his academy. And then he's going to come down on his weekends like to coach her. I mean,
she must be really freaking good if he is willing to do that.
Yeah. And that's where the show doesn't satisfy what you would call the promise of the premise.
Her playing.
Yeah. We never get to see that.
We never get a glimpse of that. There's just all this talk about how talented she is.
Yeah. Which,
Who knows, though? There's 20 episodes we haven't seen. It could be all tennis all the time.
But we see, there are a couple moments where we see her just like taking a couple swings with a tennis racket. Like there are a couple of visuals, especially in the like opening credits sequence. Where you can tell that this actor is not a skilled tennis player.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. I wasn't judging the child actor at her tennis skills.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go into it hoping to judge that. I'm just saying, like, there's nothing that they do to demonstrate that they can carry that through.
Yeah. Well, but, they had a tennis champion. I can't remember her name, but I read that there was like a tennis champ that consulted her and probably.
Yeah.
Trained her on like the basic things to like make it look like you're a tennis player.
I find it funny is like, so I just came off of, you know, I watched King Richard a couple weeks ago because I was making my way through all the Oscar noms.
Sure.
And like, I just did not know that this whole like tennis academy where people go and live is a real thing.
Apparently it is.
Didn't occur to me that this was a huge industry in the U.S., of course, in the U.S.
Yeah.
And like, it just blows my mind that these people have found a way to be like, oh, I'm going to have my own little like retreat where people live. And there's like, because this guy is exactly like the guy who coached like Venus and Serena Williams. And it was just like, what the this is real?
It's kind of wild. It's like, it's kind of weird to think people sent their kids away to do these things. Like,
yeah,
you know, sports is a big racket in the U.S. No pun intended.
Ha.
Or, you know what?
Pun intended.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
What am I saying?
One thing I thought they did a good job of doing to kind of subtly set up the choice that she has to make is that she goes off to this party with a bunch of other kids from school.
Oh, I love the party scene.
And one thing that I found really interesting about the party is that the plot point wasn't her sneaking out to a party and her mom not approving of her going to a party. There was no problem with her going to the party. When she comes back, the mom's just like, so how did you go? Like, what did you get up to? Like, it was just like a perfectly fine thing for her to go off to a party with her friends. But the real plot point that comes out of it is that at the party, this boy that she apparently has had a crush on for ages, some other mutual friend invited him to the party.
Some 24-year-old undercover cop.
Well, he looked really old. Anyway, that aside, the whole setup of like, okay, she's being pushed to like meet this guy and he likes her, but she panics and
acting so awkward. It was so relatable to me.
She acts extremely awkward around him, even though he's like not being weird or like pushy at all. Like,
yeah,
he's actually being pretty fine and she's acting super awkward. And so it is like a funny, yeah, an interesting way to set up that she then later has to consider, like, am I going to mature like a normal person?
Am I just going to be a weirdo if I go away?
Like, if I miss out on these experiences.
She's already realizes that she, like she said, like, she is basically a child. And everybody around her has grown up because she's been doing this. So she's already stunted her own adolescence and she knows that. And I did think that was interesting and, like Bryn said, relatable. Like, I remember going to parties and feeling like a kid and then you just sort of have to fake your way through it.
That was interesting. The way it's like she doesn't go to a lot of parties because she's always practicing tennis. And then when she's at one, she's super awkward and uncomfortable. And then she's like, okay, do I want to live my life that way? And show really did a pretty good job of organically setting up the main central conflict of the series.
Yeah, and I think a lot of shows would make her like be like super popular because she was a tennis pro, but in reality, nobody would care.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
because teenagers are self-absorbed, so they wouldn't care because they wouldn't really know her. They would know she was good at it. She wasn't unpopular, but she wasn't, you know, she's not like some star at her school or anything.
Absolutely.
Either.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a couple of friends who at that age were very competitive in a couple of different sports, and they were things that were also like not team sports, but solo kind of individual pursuit sports like this that take a lot of time and training and coaching and stuff like that. And it's kind of a thing where it's like other kids aren't just like, oh my God, this is like the most popular kid in school and let's all pay attention to them. Like, no, it's like their closest friends might be like, so how did that thing go on the weekend? All right, whatever. Do you want to play video games now?
Yeah.
Like, no one cares. It is very realistic.
Yeah. I thought all of it was like presented really well. Like, I wanted to like now just to shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the side characters, because there were some other really like iconic like 90s TV people that would like pop in minor roles. Like, you have Monica, who's Angela's friend. We didn't meet her in the first episode, but we meet her in the final episode that we watched. She's played by Sarah Rue, who was in like basically every sitcom at that time. So she plays her kind of more outgoing, more kind of zany friend. There's also who ends up being her boyfriend. The boy in the first episode, Jesse, ends up being her crush and then eventual boyfriend. And he's played by Randy Jocelyn, which I don't really recognize him from anything else. And I didn't end up really researching. But anyway, but as far as other well-known actors, we have Deborah Jo Rupp as one of the nuns that works at the school. Sister Mary Encarnacion.
Yay!
And we don't see her in either of the episodes that we watched, unfortunately, but I'm sure she really was quite shrill and kooky as a nun. And then there's another nun, Sister Felicia, played by Marianne Mueller-Lyle? Something like that. And then, of course, as we already mentioned, Joe Flaherty pops in as Father O'Malley. So like the most stereotypical priest name ever. I guess with that, we should like talk about episode 22, which was quite a doozy, in my opinion.
We should. I did just want to add that I found the hair and vest on Jesse to be very era triggering.
Oh, it was. Yeah. He's got some feathered hair. He's got some like
feathered to the end of time.
He looks
like he's ready to go to like who was that place that did photo shoots for
Jostens? Sears?
I don't know. Sorry, my cat just did something really cute.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, like he's early 90s boy, but not edgy at all. Like, he's like a preppy early 90s boy. He's not like a cool grunge early 90s boy.
No, he's got the hair of Jeremy, not Jason London.
He did have a plaid shirt tied around his waist.
Oh, he did.
Which was like just a sprinkle of grunge.
Just a sprinkle.
I used to rock that.
Yeah.
I used to rock
we
that.
All did.
We all did.
The plaid around my waist.
Yeah. So episode 22, we get to see what we now identify as a major trope in sitcoms, which is the dance competition. So this is like, you know, in this episode, it's weird because it seems like Mary Margaret has shifted into the A plot and Angela's business is in the B plot.
Yeah.
Which is like, the show's supposed to be about Angela. But maybe, you know, they were getting lots of feedback that the younger sister was funnier or something, which she is, to be fair.
She is.
To be fair, she's the funniest character in the show.
Most sitcoms just do episodes that are about the other characters. Yeah. That's why you have an ensemble.
Yeah, I guess.
Yes,
yeah.
But for a season finale.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Interesting choice.
But anyway, so basically.
Very low stakes season
we
finale.
We start, you know, like. So we start with Mary Margaret taking like a ballroom dancing class at her school. So it's a bunch of little kids in their like little Catholic school uniforms dancing the foxtrot and different things. And Joe Flaherty is like yelling at them to like
priest Joe Flaherty.
Yeah. Father Joe Flaherty.
Father Joe Flaherty.
as Father O'Malley is like basically being this like dictator, like shouting out like they're like, okay, 1, 2, 3, you know. Yeah. But he's very unhinged, like the way he's doing it. And like he's coming around throughout the time, like making sure that the little boys and girls aren't standing too close together.
Because
you got to keep room for the Holy Spirit.
You got to leave room for the Holy Spirit, it's a real thing.
Yeah, I thought that was just a line that was said a lot, but I guess it was probably said at a lot of Catholic schools. Like, I don't remember it at ours because
it was said at my Catholic grade school.
Yeah, yeah.
He's playing the PG version of an SCTV type of character.
Yeah.
He plays it. If you know who Joe Flaherty is out there, this character who is a priest who is yelling a lot plays it exactly the way you would assume Joe Flaherty would play this character.
Yeah.
it's funny. It's so basically they're in, I don't know if it's an after school program or if it's a class, but anyway, these kids are all learning how to do like very standard, like kind of ballroom dancing and partner dancing. And it's announced that, you know, there's going to be this big recital and dance competition that, you know, they have to like show everybody what they've come up with. And there's also this plot where this little boy named Tony is desperately trying to get Mary Margaret's attention and trying to be her dance partner. And it's kind of gross. Like everyone thinks it's like hilarious, but it's also
great little show kid.
Yeah, yeah. He basically, and I don't know if you guys recognize him.
I did, and I was going to bring this up.
He's
Barry,
did
you recognize him?
Was he was the kid, no, I don't think I did.
He's from the Seinfeld episode with the non-fat yogurt.
The one who learns to swear from Jerry.
Do you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it.
You ruined my father's business, you fat fuck.
Yeah.
That kid.
It's that kid. And apparently he's like some little showbiz kid. And okay.
You can tell he's a show.
Yeah,
but you can tell he's a little show kid.
He's like a ringer too. He's like a dancer. He busts out some tap dance moves
and
whatever.
This is a triple threat kid.
And you know what's wild, guys? I thought he was this. There is another little blonde boy.
See, I thought he was that guy.
Yes, I thought he was the guy. I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, he was on Full House.
Yes.
And he was in the Little Rascals
movie. The same kid. Yeah. Sorry, I'm getting really worked up because I didn't know
like
anyone
vague,
else.
He had like
I
a
thought
vague
it was this the same
yeah.
kid. I thought it was the
vague
same
Macaulay
kid, but it
Culkin
wasn't.
Look. Yeah.
So
yeah,
I looked it up in my research. It's two different guys. That other kid's name is Blake something or other.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, if anyone remembers the old Full House episodes, this other little blonde boy who was
show
also
kid.
Showbiz kid, some weird vaudeville throwback kid, both of them, you know, he shows up Stephanie Tanner in their little school, like weird Americana, like pageant where it's like the Yankee Doodle Dandy, like musical. And so Stephanie feels this part is like her. She's meant to play this part because DJ played the part and other people played the part. And so she thought the part was hers. And then this kid swoops in and shows off and is like way better. And so I thought that this kid in this episode was the same one. And then I found out it's not. But he happened to be the kid who was in Seinfeld. So
yeah, as soon as I saw him, I was like, I recognize this kid. Where do I know him from? And I couldn't place it. So I had to look it up. And I was like, yeah.
So to be clear, this kid's name was John Christian Grass.
Okay.
The one who's in this one. And the other little boy is, sorry, let me just confirm this. This is very important information. You
honestly,
know?
People who listen to this show know exactly who the hell we're talking
about. Yeah, they do. I would hope so.
It's funny, though, because I remember him as I thought he was a Michelle
Blake
character.
McIvor Ewing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's
yeah.
the other little blonde boy who could really dance and was like this weird little like vaudeville type. So it's wild that there were two boys. Like, I wonder if they're always competing at the same auditions. Like, that would be a really like
could
fun.
Be. No, the other guy is way better.
Which guy? The one who was in here?
The little rascals full
oh,
house
yeah,
guy.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, he could sing. We don't know if John
he can. We know that this kid must be able to. This kid has been trained from birth to like.
There are probably these like little New York boys who are like raised. Yeah. They're like, you're gonna be a star, kid.
This kid
like,
this kid tap danced before he walked.
Exactly.
So basically he has a crush on Mary Margaret and he's obsessed with being her dance partner. And he does all this like creepy stuff of like trying to like dance with her and she's like not having it. And then he finally says, I've paid off all the other boys. You're gonna be my dance partner for the rest of the semester. Which
oh,
everyone's
nice. He's rich too.
Yeah, it's played for comedy, but it's also gross because then later Diane, like basically Mary Margaret is like complaining to her mom, and her mom's response is, well, she's like Mary Margaret says, I'd rather dance with a mop than dance with him. And she's like, well, a mop isn't gonna tell you how pretty you are while you're doing it. And it's like, ugh, gross.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, just put up with the nice boy because he likes you. Like,
but Mary Margaret has a great comeback for that. Where she's like, no, but the mop will clean up the vomit.
Exactly.
the vomit I have
Mary
after dancing
Margaret
with him.
Mary Margaret is basically like an icon in this. Like, she's like.
Yeah. Now, after the first episode, I did write in my notes the question, like, does this show have some sort of religious undertone? Because there were, I think I counted 3 or 4 references to
there was
some,
a lot of mention
some,
of God.
Yeah, some religion-related reference. And then this episode, of course, answered that question because I'm like, okay, so she is in a religious school and there's a priest teaching them dance classes and stuff.
But it's specifically Catholic, which is kind of funny. It opens it up to more comedy. It's not like, nobody is like preaching, you know, real like religious messages. It's all just like framed by... you know, the Catholic Church and like the weird, you know, repression that
and
exists
for the time,
in that world.
And for the time period, like, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, like this was very common in sitcoms for the characters
and
to
it does
be Catholic.
Set up some good situations with, you know, kids rebelling against it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And actually,
very mildly.
To that end, the whole Footloose thing.
Okay. All right. So let's get into it, right? So basically, there is this opportunity for Mary Margaret to, you know, dance in this like recital slash contest and possibly win. And it turns out that while they're practicing, she's trying to do interesting dance moves that Father O'Malley does not approve of. And he's thinking, oh, no, you're too rebellious. Like, you can't do that. And, you know, but Tony's kind of like into it. So they're both kind of conspiring. Like, they want to kind of really break out and do some big moves. And for some reason, Brian shows up at the school. We don't know.
He's picking her up.
He's picking her up, but it just seems kind of odd and out of place.
This is the older brother.
Yeah, Brian, the quirky older brother. And there's like this weird kind of showdown between him and Father O'Malley because he, like, Father O'Malley remembers him from when he attended. And so there's this kind of like awkward moment there where they're like kind of confronted. And then Brian takes them home back to the house. And he basically admits to these guys that he's haunted by the memories of, you know, being a child under Father O'Malley's tutelage and like not getting to really be himself on the dance floor.
Yeah,
and
he
not,
also wanted to dance yes, and express himself.
He wanted to be like, and so there's this whole like, theme of being an individual, which is kind of wild that it's like through ballroom dancing. Like that's how you're going to be different and show that you're different. But anyway.
Learning choreography that someone else created.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So basically Brian is like trying to live through these two other kids. Yeah. He's basically like, okay, we're going to like, you guys, I'm going to help you guys put on like a show that's like, that's going to blow people's minds. Like this is going to be epic. And then there's like a full on like dance training montage.
A full on Footloose dance training montage. Not just Footloose thematically, Footloose literally the song.
Yeah. They play the Footloose song. It's not with like Kenny Loggins. Like it's obviously a re-recording of it, but
it's
anyway.
Like a decently budgeted re-recording
was it?
Of it.
No, it was the original.
I don't think it was. I don't
CBC,
think it was.
Man, they had the money.
I don't think it was. We should look it up. But anyway, well, I mean, they could afford Carly Simon as the theme song. We should throw that out as well.
It's,
like Carly Simon wrote
the
theme song.
Man, they got the money.
Yeah.
On that note, so yes, Carly Simon did them a custom theme song and performed it. And I wanted to ask if I'm remembering this correct that. Was it Working Girl that had? Okay.
So she, no, but the thing with that is they recycled the theme song from the movie.
Right.
But the one for Working Girl, the sitcom, was not her recording it.
Correct.
So it was her song.
But it was her
like
song,
her,
right?
Like her, the song that she wrote, it was the same song as just another singer recording it.
No, it's just when I saw that online, I was like, is this the second time that Carly Simon's coming up for a sitcom theme this year?
I feel like, you know,
this is a bad theme. I'm sorry, Carly
it's,
Simon.
It's not good. I was like, ugh, this is like very dated.
It's
not
generic sentimentality. It is the most unmemorable piece of music I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, sorry, Carly Simon.
Sorry.
It actively made me mad both times I heard it.
Yeah, it totally didn't. I felt like it was even dated for 1993.
Yeah.
I feel like the show itself was kind of
dated.
Like, it was dated more. Like, it was
it felt like 1988.
It was like, it had like a Walton sentimentality to it that just was not what was going on. Like, I feel like Full House seems edgy compared to this.
It does.
And Full House is about
but
the most
there
like,
is funny humor in this. That's the thing.
Sure.
That's why I'm so excitedly talking about it is because there is some really funny jokes in it. It's wholesome, but it is very clever. It's way more clever and less like groan worthy, like, you know, like Full House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Leave Full House alone.
So we went off track a little bit. So basically where we left off was Brian decides he's going to be like their dance coach, basically. And like, and the funny thing is that not only is he like the whole montage is him like dancing with them. It's like right out of an 80s movie, which is very funny. But he's also like picking out their costumes and they're like, you know, they're very silly costumes. And kind of like skimpy. So it's kind of like, what the fuck? But so anyway, so basically they end the montage with the kids exhausted and Brian is like passed out.
That was a show. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hey, honey, why haven't you eaten your toast?
I don't know. I guess I'm just sick of this regular boring peanut butter.
Well, maybe it's time we make our meals an adventure.
Whoa, what's this? Wonder Nut Butter?
Try it.
Wow, it's good. It's spiced, but not spicy.
You're such a witty and precocious child.
Spread the world with Wonder Nut Butter's internationally inspired flavors. It's made with only peanuts, spices, and salt, and no added sugar. Try every flavor of Wonder Nut Butter's today.
I don't know. That kid sounded a little old.
Really? I thought it was pretty good casting.
That commercial failed to mention that Wonder is based right here in Toronto, Canada.
Or that you can eat Wonder Nut Butters as a healthy snack, like, you know, adding it to a smoothie.
Also, there are three flavors available, inspired by spices from India, Morocco, or Thailand.
I really liked the Moroccan peanut butter on toast with apricot or peach jam.
I've tried Wonder. It's delicious. It looked so enticing. These ads really work.
You can even cook with it, like if you're making a soup or a sauce.
We've been talking a really long time about this commercial.
Yeah, wait, is this Meta? Are we part of a commercial? Is Wander a sponsor if that was a show?
All I know is that our listeners can get a 15% discount when they order Wander Nut Butters online at tastewander.com/twas. That's taste, WANDER.com/TWAS, and use the coupon code TWAS15 at checkout. And you can follow them at taste.wander on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
What are you reading from? Where is that? You didn't answer any of my questions.
We're not even talking about Angela's B-plot because it's just so meh.
It's a very meh B plot.
Because basically
I'll do it in two sentences, yeah, and then there, we can go back to dancing.
Go for it.
Angela gets hurt. Angela hurts her leg, so she has to lay up for a few days.
Yeah.
So her coach gives her a couple days off to rest up, but she recovers quicker than she intended, and she starts hanging out with her friends because she remembers what it's like to have fun.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, her mom is like, well, you shouldn't do that. You're lying to the coach. And then the coach finds out, and he's like, hey, you don't do that. And then she's like, okay, I won't. And that's it.
Yeah, that was it. It was very anticlimactic.
And they wrap it up with dialogue that's like so on the nose. I did find it both funny but also lazy when she has the line that she's confessing what she did to her mom. And she's just like, yeah, I milked my injury so I could get a few more days off to spend time with my friends because that was fun. Like, she just, like, she explains her B-plot premise in a sentence, too.
Yeah.
I also didn't understand, like, what side I was supposed to take here, where I'm just like, I don't know, shouldn't she be living her life? Isn't it better that she's happy for a few days? But they're like, no, you have a responsibility to this coach.
Yeah.
You have to do this.
Giving
and
her
this
all
is
this
your
guilt
life.
For
so I was, yeah.
wanting and like, to I, do stuff
and
with
Judith
her friends.
Light, I think Judith Light even says, like, this is the gift that God gave you. And like,
yeah. It's, I don't know. It's funny. It's like,
back
again,
to dancing.
Let's get back to the dancing. But just first, I'll say it's clearly still like, you know, talking about that theme in circles, like it doesn't get resolved. Like the whole thing of like, oh, the struggle between being a regular teen and being like a competitive athlete. So it's like, you know, it's something that doesn't really seem to develop. It seems to be like this thing that just continues to plague her. And she's trying to like, you know, have both worlds, like straddle both worlds.
I thought like that it was leading to like a season ending thing where the coach drops her.
Yeah.
Because he's sort of like, you know, he's like, call me when you're going to get it ready to get serious or something. And then in the next scene, like she's just talking to her friends. She's just like, yeah, I'm already back to doing it. And you're like, oh, so that wasn't like a cliffhanger. Like,
no, it totally wasn't.
Yeah.
But did you see how he comes in? He's like, where's the phenom?
Yeah, sure did. Sure
so
did.
I guess
and he calls her phenom.
Yeah, throughout the series, I guess he calls her phenom, and that's why it's called that. But
yeah.
I don't know. So back to dancing. So that's a way more fun plot. So basically, Father O'Malley kind of catches wise to what's going on, and he gets in Tony's head and is like, basically, like, you can't mess up your life with this like wild, rebellious woman, basically.
This
which
like
is so stupid.
This 7 or 8 year old girl.
Yeah. Which is like so annoying and sexist because it's putting all the blame on her because, you know, and in
but he, it is funny dialogue.
It is very
it's,
funny.
Yeah,
it's funny very funny.
It's
he's like,
from Joe
you know,
exactly.
Stay away from her. And then so Tony like gives in and is like, at first he's like, he's like, Mary Margaret, I can't be your partner anymore. Like, I can't do it. You know, I've got to. You know, and
they have
so,
a very mature conversation back and forth where he's like, I can't be your partner anymore unless you're willing to follow the rules. And she's just like, well, I'm not going to follow the rules. I need to express myself. He's like, then I guess we have to like move on to other partners or whatever. And it's like, you'd think they're 40 having this conversation, which if that was the intent of the joke, which I think it was, is funny.
Yeah.
Well, I do love is that like he storms off and then she shouts out after him, I was going to let you go to the movies with me in high school.
And then the whole room gasps like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then she's like, as a friend. And then the whole room's like, oh.
Yeah. And so, okay, so it finally, the day of the big recital slash contest arrives, and they're both with different partners, and they're both in their little... Yeah,
Dwight the Geek.
Yeah, so she's dancing with Dwight or Dwayne or whoever he is, and he's just kind of a little square, and he's like not, you know... It's just not exciting, and she can't really bust out her good moves. And same with Tony, like his like little partner is like very vanilla. And yeah, Brian shows up on the scene in the most insane looking like velvet blazer with like what is it, like an argyle? No, it's not argyle. It's
almost Ascot? Like a. Are you thinking of the word ascot?
No, there's like a pattern on the blazer, and it's like this weird like paisley type thing. So he's like ready to like, you know, he's like there in this pretense of being like, you know, oh, I'm the coach and I'm like finally living my dream through these like much younger children. And like at what point, where is the spark, guys? Like what is it that like finally gets Tony and Mary Margaret back together? I'm okay, blanking on that.
So, okay, first of all, I have to do a quick sidebar because you said this in passing, but I don't think our listeners, unless they watch this, will know. When you called that kid the geek, there's a joke.
That was such a great, yeah, that was such
his,
a great.
His last name is literally the geek, and the little girl does a perfect delivery on saying like maybe it's Dutch.
Yeah,
and explaining that is literally his name is the geek.
Because her mom is like, don't make fun of him.
Yeah, she's like, no, that's his name. And then there's a follow up joke about like getting driven to school in his dad's like wienermobile, and the mom again is like, oh, what? Come on, I'm sure their car is perfectly nice. And she's like, no, like his dad works for a hot dog company and drives around in a giant hot dog car. Like, those were such, again, Simpsons jokes, but, like, well executed.
It's so weird because it's a family sitcom, but there's these really funny, kooky bits that are ripped straight from, like, The Simpsons.
Yeah, these really hard-turn jokes that are actually pretty funny.
Like, but, I mean, those are kids' jokes, too. Yeah. A kid would laugh at all that. So.
They're, like, wholesome enough that you can fit them in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what was the turn? Well, okay, so first of all, she's dancing with the geek. They get cut out immediately because he's like a brutal dancer with like seven left feet.
So what it is the recital portion ends and then the contest begins.
Yeah. They get cut immediately.
Yeah.
And then she's very sad and disappointed because she gets to dance for like 4 seconds because he's brutal.
Yeah, because he's not good.
And then mom is consoling her and says, no, this isn't your fault, sweetie. This is my fault. I should have supported you. I shouldn't have made this about you winning some contest. I should have just like let you dance the way you wanted to dance, because she realizes like, well, she followed the rules and she got cut instantly. So that's like not a good experience for a kid. So the mother's apologizing to her and says like, you need to do what you're going to do or whatever. Yeah. And the mom basically then encourages her to like show whatever it is that she had planned as her special dance. And then she goes and like
convinces Tony
to, and at this point it's been set up that Tony is going to win.
He's going to win because Joe Flaherty like loves the kid.
Oh,
and
he thinks
he's
Joe Flaherty wants this kid to win. It was almost like predetermined from the beginning. Yeah, like it was a lock. The kid had it under a lock.
And then
my favorite joke is when he's going around all the kids and he's cutting people, and he goes up to Tony. He's like, this thing's yours, but I'm going to string along the other kids for a couple more minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he knows he's going to win, but he bows out anyway.
And tells his partner. I'm taking a stand
on what does he say?
Everyone's individuality or something.
He's like, apparently, according to Anne Margaret, I have to take a stand on behalf of everyone's individuality.
Mary Margaret.
And says it like, again, like pretty funny deadpan delivery.
Yeah.
And then they break into...
Okay, but wait. There's a very funny beat right before that. So she grabs a cassette tape. Like, they rip off their clothes.
I was going to say, they rip off these clothes where they have...
It's like tearaway clothes.
They have tearaway clothes.
Tearaway clothes, and they have other alternate costumes already on underneath the ones they were wearing.
These like fluorescent, like these black outfits with like fluorescent accents. And it's like, wait, why did Tony have put underneath if he planned to follow the rules.
Exactly.
But
it doesn't make any sense,
and then
but it's hilarious.
Mary Margaret tosses a cassette tape at Brian to
who is now like in charge of the music.
Yeah. He's like, she's like, give my regards to Broadway, Padre. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
And then Father O'Malley is like, Tony.
Yeah, literally like that.
Actually, all of this sort of kind of plays like a live action Simpsons bit.
It is. Mm-hmm. It totally is. And then so they break into this dance. And it is,
and it's
like
a very, I wish I remember the name of the tune,
okay,
but it's
the tune
it's,
is Sing 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 by
okay.
Benny Goodman.
Okay.
And they break into full blown swing dancing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's full on.
So it's not necessarily
khakis ad swing dancing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's clearly what it is. It's not really that like innovative, but they do cartwheels at one point. So it's like very like, you know, impressive.
For their age, it's very impressive.
It's very
it's
good.
It's
yeah.
great.
And yeah, so like I guess the moral is no, just be yourself. Just dance like, you know, you want to dance. And like Angela is like watching her with Jesse and they're just like, go marry Margaret. And like,
and it brings,
everyone's delighted. It brings everyone together.
It brings
basically.
The house down. And in the end, we see that Priest Joe Flaherty, I'm not going to say the character's name, Priest Joe
Father
Flaherty.
O'Malley.
Father O'Malley.
Joe Flaherty. Even he comes to appreciate the dance at the end when he sees that everyone else in the room is applauding.
And he takes credit for
because
it,
he's
basically.
Yeah, it's not that. It's that everybody loves it, so he starts taking credit for it.
Yeah,
and,
he acts like he was somehow
he
endorsing
like,
this. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's basically it.
Yeah, it's basically it. Yep.
Except for one more thing, the older brother. I didn't realize this in the first episode, but in this episode, I realized, like, where did I just see this guy? And I was like, oh, I just saw him in High Fidelity.
Yeah.
And yes, Barry, I watched High Fidelity for the first time ever this week.
Yeah.
God, how have you not seen anything?
I know. It's the worst. I was watching High Fidelity, the series, which.
Okay. Yeah, with Bonet, yeah.
Yeah. No, with Kravitz. It's Lisa Bonet's daughter.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, so it's Zoe Kravitz is playing like the base. It's like a gender swapped like High Fidelity. It's actually very good, and I'm sad that it only had one season. But anyway, it basically really improves on the movie, because if you watch the movie now, the movie is still classic. There's just some things that are not quite great. Doesn't really hold up. A lot of like toxic male like things. But Aaron hadn't seen it until like this weekend. So, and he's like, Todd Luiso is hilarious in that as Dick, the like.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Anyway.
I just thought you would appreciate another example of me having not
random,
seen a classic movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
And I guess we learn also that Jesse is now her boyfriend.
Yeah.
By the end of the season.
Yeah.
There is
that. Yeah, because they kiss. So the reaction that the audience has to them kissing is that it's their first kiss. So.
Yeah. But there is a reference in the dialogue earlier to like they seem to be together as like they're dating or some sort of couple. That other girl, the friend that you mentioned, like obviously
Sarah Rue.
Yeah.
I guess we don't know how she entered into the picture. Like in
he
what
doesn't
episode,
know who
but...
Sarah Rue is. I'm calling it right now.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. I knew it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she was in Pearl.
Yes,
okay.
She was
she
one
was,
of the kids
okay.
in Pearl.
She was, you know, there's a lot of overlap.
Popular. We just think about her because she was on Popular.
She was in the show Popular, yeah. In everything. She was basically in everything in the late, like mid, to, like early to like late 90s and early 2000s. And
But yeah, I would say Popular was her biggest role.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm actually kind of surprised this show was canceled after one season, because it's pretty good. It's not amazing, but when you compare it to other shows from the time, like...
It's fine.
It's good. It's fine. It came on after Full House, and I'm like, I would have rather watched this.
It's definitely more original than a lot of the other... family sitcoms at the time. Like I thought it definitely was like a fresh, it felt pretty fresh, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I did some reading on this because I'm like, well, why was this canceled? Well, apparently, so I found this article. It's like a brief article from the LA Times of like in 1994. It's called Why ABC Decided to Cancel Phenom. Television ranking 28th among network series and holding 95% of the lead-in audience aren't enough to earn a second season. Creative differences may be why. So basically, that headline says it all. And that's an article you can find. It's by Michelle Willens. And yeah, it just kind of talks about how there was like all this like shit behind the scenes between the main, like the showrunners and the network. Like the network didn't like the direction they were going in. And so it was creative differences, which is like annoying. It was probably these like, you know, like as we can see and as we can see from their previous and work that followed, they're really talented comedy writers. So they wanted to like push the show and make it be like really good. And the network was like, no, it's not enough of a formulaic family sitcom. And, you know, so there was like a lot of drama behind the scenes, it seems. And that's why, like, you know, it didn't really take off. Like, but apparently I don't really understand these rankings, but I guess it wasn't bad ratings. Like people were watching.
No, it was good ratings. 28th with a 95% retention rate would be considered like a hit.
Yeah,
it was a hit.
Yeah, for its first season. Yeah, for its first season, it was doing well. I also read that article and there was a reference to James L. Brooks' reaction when it was canceled, that he was shocked and baffled by it being canceled because, it was kind of performing very well for the first season of a show, well enough that the precedent would be that you would expect a show to be given at least one more season.
At that level,
at that level. And
they basically killed it. Like, ABC killed
like,
it.
Let's put it this way. Seinfeld wasn't doing numbers like that until, like, two or three seasons in.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So there's suspicion in the article that there was just, you know, like, the network had it out for this show from the beginning. Like, they just never quite understood it and didn't really want to keep it going.
These guys probably wouldn't take their notes.
Perhaps.
That's probably what it was. Like, they were strong, you know, and, like, there was, like, a quote in the article about, oh, ABC is just power hungry or something. It's like,
Now, I will admit, like, the show does feel a bit all over the place.
Some of it seems kind of random.
So if you're saying, like, explain this show or explain where this is going in future years, between the thing we identified with, like, how can you keep this tennis trajectory going when there's not much you can really show with that, and there's only so many plots you can base around her being torn between the two worlds of lots of tennis practice versus wanting to be a kid. Like, there's only so many times you can do that. It's like, I get it. It is a little hard to define, but at the same time, if it's funny and getting good ratings, it one more year to figure it out.
Essentially, it's just a family show that has like a bit of a hook to it. So it's like, you know, if they stop focusing on the tennis stuff, then they just lean into the family stuff.
Yeah.
They knew that.
Were they also setting up a will they or won't they between Lou and Diane? I think they were.
They might have been.
Maybe, because he was hitting on her at the like the beginning.
From
of
the outset.
Yeah, from the pilot, like
he was a male character on a sitcom.
Yeah,
of
so
course
he was like
hitting
on Diane, and then like there wasn't really anything like that in the second episode. So maybe it was something they tried, but they like abandoned or something.
It was a pretty Lou light episode, though.
Yeah, it was.
But I did see that the premise of one of the other episodes in the middle of the season was that Lou briefly dates her sister.
Oh, shit.
Who visits.
So definitely a will they, won't they, because that's the kind
that's
of thing
the
you would...
Jealousy
that's
the jealousy thing
that's
the that
kind
you
of thing
in,
you,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing
I
you'd
mean,
do.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, guys. I might have to revisit this show even more because I really enjoyed it as a kid and I can't say I didn't enjoy it. Like, this would be a fun thing for me to watch all the way through, I think.
I think this is a weird week where I think I'm more tepid on it than you guys are. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think I'm the one with the most enthusiasm.
I will forget everything about this show within days.
I don't know. I think part of it is just having some nostalgia as well. Like, it's again, it's like one of those shows I remember looking forward to. And I don't know if it's funny.
I think we got into this podcast assuming there would be more shows like that.
Yeah.
But there really weren't.
I mean, there are. There's definitely more shows that we have planned for the future that I remember sitting down and watching. So it'll be like a thing that'll come up again. But
yeah.
As of right now, it's mainly Phenom.
Bryn, why don't you connect Phenom with Friends?
Right. So this one was very straightforward. It's One Degree, basically through Deborah Jo Rupp, who unfortunately we didn't see in either episode that we watched. So again, she plays one of the nuns at Mary Margaret's school, and she also plays Alice on Friends. She's a recurring role on Friends. There might have been more connections, but I just mainly focused on the main cast of Phenom, and I really couldn't find any. There was no like, there could have been more than two or three connections, but I was just being lazy. and my first pass was like, well, none of them guest starred on Friends, so no. But I knew Deborah Jo Rupp was Alice Knight. So Alice Knight Buffet.
I was going to say, whose sister-in-law was she?
Well, that's great.
Yeah. All right. Good to go.
How about the spinoff?
Yeah. I mean, the spinoff is a little more involved. Like the first thing to say right off the bat is everybody who's in this is basically already established. Like they really, whoever like cast this thing did a really great job because like, you know, literally everyone was already kind of a known entity. I guess we'll start with Todd Luiso. I guess it's safe to say we're all fans of his. Like he's very enjoyable. He's definitely one of these like character actors that pops up in so many things. You know, this was only the beginning for him, basically. He followed up his stint on Phenom in roles in many films. And some popular ones include Jerry Maguire, High Fidelity, which we already mentioned, Thank You for Smoking. And recently he's popped up in other TV series as a guest star. Recent roles include Suburgatory, NCIS, and Silicon Valley.
I love him in Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, he's so good. Ashley Johnson, who, as I referenced earlier, she was the littlest Seaver on Growing Pains. You know, so she had just gotten off of that like long running series. She was like a late addition, I guess, because she was like their oops baby on on Growing Pains. She continued to be a successful performer. She kind of appeared in a lot of other ABC sitcoms that didn't really go anywhere. There was another one where she plays Marie Osmond's daughter and Betty White's granddaughter on Maybe This Time. It's called Maybe This Time. And I think that's on our list of shows to cover in the future. And there's like a few others where it was just she was like one of the kids in like the family of a short-lived sitcom. And then, you know, later on, she did some movies. She played Mel Gibson's teen daughter on What Woman What. But she really took off as a voice actor and has like tons and tons of credits in cartoons and video games. Fun fact, she was the voice of Gretchen Grundler on Recess.
I did know that.
So there's lots of Recess connections, Aaron. You need to get on watching Recess.
Won't get any of
me
them.
Neither. Me neither. Me neither. All remember?
Right. Neither of you. This
I've
is
had
bullshit.
Several yeah. people who listen to this podcast yell at me for
yeah,
this.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I had someone, an avid listener, text me to be like, you don't know Recess?
The nerd in me wants to throw a special shout out to Ashley Johnson for her. She is very known to the nerd community as for her performance in The Last of Us games. She's she's an absolutely phenomenal actress in all The Last of Us games. And it goes way beyond voice acting in those because she does full motion performance in those. And she is absolutely heartbreaking. And she's also a lovely singer.
You know, Barry, you're right. I didn't go deep enough with this part of her career.
No. I'm always going to throw the geek stuff in.
Yeah. But I mean, she does seem to be like really big in the world of like gaming and not only video games, but also like RPG gaming, because there's like a series. I think it's a web series that's like listed as her most recent credit. where it's basically people playing RPG games and she's like one of the ongoing characters. And I don't know if they're just filming.
She's on she has a regular show right now. She's on she's on a cop show right now.
It's,
she's a regular on a cop show right now.
I'm a big
fan of Ashley Johnson.
Basically, she's just been working.
She randomly shows up in the Avengers as well. So
yeah, she's like out there. She's like a very accomplished and she's definitely found her niche. Like she went from like sitcom, precocious sitcom kid to like a very, you know, successful turn as like a performer in the world of like gaming and different things like that. Okay, so then we also have Angela Goethals, who played Angela Doolin. So before Phenom, she was one of Macaulay Culkin's sisters in Home Alone, in the Home Alone movies. She was Linny.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
I think she's the girl who says les incompetents.
She is les incompetents.
Yeah, so she already, you know, had experience being kind of a precocious tween in in the 90s. So she continued to act throughout the 90s and early 2000s. You know, she was in the main cast of the short-lived show Do-Over. She was also a recurring character in 24. She played Maya Driscoll. I haven't seen any 24, I have to admit, so I don't really know if that's like a big role. But anyway,
Not as big as William Devane.
So. Okay, yeah. So she spent like most of the 2000s to today doing guest star roles. So she'd pop up in random things as a guest star. But also, this is fun. So she's done a lot of theater as well. But also, she has tons of credits as a narrator on Audible. So any of you audiobook heads, like I include myself in that, you know, you could have very well been read a recent book by Angela Goethals. So I think it's such a cool career that she managed to carve out, where it's like she's a working actor, working performer, but she's kind of like anonymous as well. Like that seems like the dream, like just someone who's doing it for the sake of doing it and is like, you know, out there, but like is not like Brad Pitt or Angela Jolie and they don't have a normal life. Like she very much, you know, but that's just me assuming. I don't really know anything about her in her life, but based on my very superficial research about her, I'm like, oh, that sounds really awesome.
There honestly, there probably is a community out there who is very into Audible narrators.
She's
like a star.
So it's funny because I saw just like a little blurb about her on a random website that didn't seem that credible where it mentions this. And then I like looked her up further and then it was like Angela Goethals credits on Audible and I pull it up and there's like tons. So it was kind of cool.
It'd be a good game.
Yeah, it's neat. And then obviously then we have Judith Light, who again was already an icon. You know, Phenom was just one little blip in her very long career. I feel like she's been in everything from my childhood.
What did we see her in very recently that was good?
Well,
what
she was in Transparent. She's the Transparent. Mom in Transparent.
And something else, I think, too.
She was in Tick, Tick, Boom. She plays the agent. So she plays Jonathan Larson, which is Andrew Rannell's character in Tick, Tick, Boom. She plays his kind of wacky agent.
Yeah, that's right.
She was also really great in the American crime story Gianni Versace. Season. She was like really, really good in that. She was also in the Dallas reboot. She was in Ugly Betty, Law and Order Special Victims Unit for like, you know, years. She played
very
a judge.
Versatile.
So she is like, she's extremely versatile. She's like one of the most versatile actors. And like, I'm just always happy when I see her in things. I even enjoyed all of her Proactive Solution infomercials. Do you guys remember those?
I don't remember her being in those.
For a long time, she was the main spokesperson for Proactive Solution, and she was
They had a lot of big people.
They did, but she was like their first person. She's like what brought it to the world, basically. So that was kind of funny. I wanted to mention that because that was a random thing. And then we have William Devane, who was already a huge like TV star.
He's a phenom.
He is a phenom in his own right. Yeah. But after Phenom, he didn't slow down at all. He co-starred on Early Edition, the Michael Richards Show, which was short-lived, but still pretty, has a lot of like fame in certain circles. He was in The West Wing, 24, like Barry already mentioned. He was also somewhat recently in the film Interstellar, and he was in The Grindr, which Aaron and I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
That kind of short-lived, it was Rob Lowe. Yeah, Rob Lowe and... what's his name? Ben Savage or Fred Savage. And they're like the lawyer family. And he is like the patriarch of the family.
By the way, if we ever do your idea of a spin-off podcast about short-lived, really good shows.
Yeah.
That's got to be on the list.
Yeah, because The Grindr was very entertaining. Yeah, I guess that's all I got. Yeah, that's all I got. I didn't really get into it with a lot of the other side characters because we know.
No, that's fine.
I know. I feel like that was already an hour on its own.
That's great.
Yeah.
So I think we should probably give Mr. Producer a call and.
Why not?
I feel like this show is like really his era, like his sweet spot. So let's see what he has to say about this.
Hello, my boy.
Hey, Mr. Producer.
What are we chatting about today?
Phenom.
Ah, sure, Phenom. I remember this one. Judith Light Project. Willie Devane was a blast of energy. And if we're being honest, it was often whispered about around town that his character was partially based on yours truly. But I never really saw the similarities.
Well, he was a brash, offensive, nonsense-talking loudmouth who... Yeah, you're right. No similarities.
That's what I'm saying.
So besides possibly inspiring the character, did you have any connection with the production?
Well, 93 was kind of a tight year for me, so nothing official. But I did give them some Napnose.
Napnose?
Napkin notes. You know, a couple outstanding showbiz types like myself, they get to grabbing cocktails at a place like the Bella Vista Lunchroom or the Superior Hat Club. And of course, we do some gabbing about our projects. So, you know, you're chatting and you jot a few bullet points down on some cocktail napkins and boom, you just saved a pilot.
Do the writers like that?
Some time-tested advice from some old white men hazily scrolled on bourbon-soaked pieces of paper and treated like gospel? What's not to love? Hell, some shows barely have more than a collection of napkins when they go to shoot a retooled pilot.
So, for this one...
I think I remember giving them some stuff like, weird little girl says precocious things, dance contest, rich guy says offensive things to big laughs, teenage girl good at thing.
I mean, are those really original ideas? I mean, dance contests alone seems to pop up in a lot of shows we've covered.
Well, sure. I mean, I must have written it down on dozens of napkins over the years. They're not all going to be winners.
No, I guess not.
Well, all right, kid. I got to run. I got some gumbo ready to come off the stove.
I've got a few small leftovers.
Go for it.
That I'll run through. So, first of all, I love this little throwaway line at the very first scene of the very first episode where they're doing the exposition about how the dad ran off to explain why this is a classic single mom show scenario. And I love the little throwaway line of how, you know, they should have never watched the movie City Slickers, which apparently inspired him to go find himself.
Find his smile.
Oh, that was very funny.
Go find his smile.
His smile. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did think that was pretty funny.
Here's a weird thing. Why is it in sitcoms, why early 90s sitcoms, you got the single parent thing. Why is it always dead moms or deadbeat dads?
Yeah. It's never dead dad. And,
it wasn't until I recently started watching The Great North, where basically the mom's gone because she's a deadbeat. It's the first time I've ever seen it.
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess officially we should say the trope is not just single parent. It is the mom is gone because she died and it's tragic that she's gone.
She died.
Or the dad is gone because he's a piece of shit. Those are the two options.
Yeah, that's it.
And of course, this show being programmed on TV right after Full House is, of course, playing off the precise other scenario. So there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. My other leftovers real quick are the line early on in the pilot where she's trying to convince her mom to let her go to this. This is when we think that the tennis academy is going to be full time 7 days a week. So it'll mean leaving home. And she says, "Mom, I know this isn't easy for you, but so what?"
Yeah, that is a good line.
I liked that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to like rehash the fact that the older brother is such a wild card. And I wanted more of him.
Yeah.
While it's hard to see how they could get years of mileage out of the tennis premise, I could have gone in for a lot more of the older brother and the younger sister.
Yeah.
There's like rich depth to those characters.
I think they had something there where in a lot of these shows, those two characters might be throwaways and both of them are pretty enjoyable.
Yeah.
The mom doesn't really add much to the proceedings.
I feel like it's a bit of a waste of Judith Light, in my opinion.
She's never really funny.
Yeah. She's never used
She's
for
very
humor.
Much the straight man, and it's yeah. very like.
And Angela sort of is kind of the straight man too. So it's like.
And that part of it, I think, could work. Like, I think the idea of the middle child being the straight man character, and perhaps they start over time to veer away from focusing on the tennis. Maybe she's still playing tennis, but that doesn't have to be like the main point of every episode. And if she's more the like straight man character and the siblings and the boyfriends and girlfriends and all these other characters and the coach can all be like super silly. You got something to that.
I
agree. They should have done more with Judith Light. That was like,
that's an interesting thing because you could take it in like, she could get more and more successful. So the family then starts to depend on her for their living, because she's making money and all that. So then, she does become the straight person and they're all the wacky entourage, basically.
Yeah.
I got nothing to add. I said all I did, and now I'm losing my voice. So
I got nothing else too. I'll just say that thanks for joining us again, R.A.P. Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes.
And welcome back to the show, Barry. You were missed in our special bonus episode last time around. It's always more fun to have all of us together.
Yes.
But that was also kind of a fun format that we will probably revisit
again
in various combinations of us whenever someone needs a week off.
All right, folks,
I'm looking forward to hosting it with my cat.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, nice.
Okay,
all right, and cut to credits.
Bye-bye.
That Was a Show is created and hosted by Bryn Burney, Andrew Barry Helmer, and myself, Aaron Yeager. It's a production of Radio Gizmo in Toronto, Canada. Subscribe, rate, review, and share. Follow us on Instagram and tell your friends about it. That Was a Show.
Radio Gizmo.